Mrs. Fischel, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mrs. Fischel?
I was born in Vienna, Austria.
In which year?
1898.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father had a little factory, and it's sad to say, for coffins.
So he was the owner of the factory?
He was the owner of the factory.
How many people did he employ?
I wouldn't really quite know, about 20 or 25. It was a small business.
Were you Jewish by religion?
Yes, we were Jewish by religion, but neither Orthodox nor really religious. We did not keep to Jewish religious habits. We were liberated, Austrian liberated Jews at the time of the Emperor Franz Josef.
But were you believers or were you atheists?
We were not atheists, no. We were believers, but being brought up in Catholic schools with very little religious tuition, we didn't know very much about the Jewish religion.
Where were you educated?
I was educated in an elementary school in Vienna, and then went to a secondary school that was called the Lyceum, where we did not have Latin and Greek like in a gymnasium, but we had a lot of English and French, mathematics and science, and quite a lot of very good art, drawing, painting.
How old were you when you finished your education?
I was 17. I took a sort of matriculation and passed with very good marks, and especially in English, because we spoke English at home. I had English nursery governesses, and I had quite a lot of drawing lessons privately, and enjoyed handicrafts, and my father took me to museums, and I was well educated in arts and crafts, let's say that.
So you knew English, but
I knew English better than German, really, at the time. Because I started, when I was 2, we had a New Zealand governess, an English-speaking governess, and we spoke English at home at meals. And I always found that writing essays in English was easier for me than in German, because the syntax, and it was easier for me, the shorter language than the very floral language in German. So English was really, we were quite bilingual, the whole family,
so
my brothers as well.
What do you consider to be your mother tongue?
German.
What was life like for you in Austria before the Nazis took over?
Well, don't forget, I married to Prague when I was 24. So I lost the being at home in Vienna, and I went as Prague in Czechoslovakia had changed greatly since after the First World War, when Czechoslovakia was taken away from the Austrian Empire and was a republic. And it was quite different than living in the old monarchy of Austria, brought up in an Austrian school, as a monarchist, more or less, until after the First World War.
How did life in Czechoslovakia differ from Austria for you?
Very much so, because I married fairly wealthy industrialist, and I could not speak Czech, but the people in Prague spoke German and Czech, but one ought to have spoken Czech. I, of course, spoke German at home, because my husband also had been brought up in the German language, although he had been born in Prague and grew up in Prague, because during the Bohemia, Czechoslovakia, Bohemia belonging to the Austrian Empire, people spoke German and had German schools and Czech schools, and he went to German schools. So we talked German at home in Prague. But there was a great split between the Czech and German population, between the Gentile and Jewish population, which at first I could not really understand, and then resented all the 20 years I lived in Prague, that you belonged to either German Jewish society or German Gentile society or Czech Jewish society or Czech Gentile society, which to me, coming from Vienna, was terrible.
You're talking in terms of social mixing now,
yes.
Are you?
Yes. But that has nothing to do with my later life. That was just that I resented that because it disturbed life. It made one feel disgusted that such things should happen.
So if you wanted to mix socially with somebody from another section, was it not possible?
It was possible, but there were remarks, and it was difficult. And I had no possibility to meeting or mixing with Czech people. Of my life, of my standard, or of my, as friends, the Czech people I mixed with were teachers or salespeople, and I personally had no social contact with Czech people.
Did non-Jewish people discriminate against Jews? Was there?
Yes. But that was, of course, also in Vienna. Only it depended again who your friends were and with what people you mixed, whether you felt it or not. There were very many people who felt anti-Semitism in Vienna, whereas I personally had no experience with that until I tried to enter the Royal Academy for Arts. And I was told, after the head of the academy had seen my drawings, that he would suggest I become Catholic. Then I would have had more chances to enter the academy, because they had numerous clauses. They only were allowed so and so many Jews, as they only took in 20 new students a year. It would be better to be Catholic, then I would have a chance to be taken into the school of the Royal Academy.
But you refused to change?
I refused to do it, and I went to a branch of the academy where they did not ask these questions, and stayed at that school for 1 year only, because then I married and had to give up this schooling, which always hurt me, because I would have loved to finish my training in painting and drawing and perhaps sculpture.
Was anti-Semitism worse in Vienna or in Prague?
I think I knew more about it in Prague because the split of belonging to the Jewish-German society and the country being smaller, the society smaller, and through my marriage being in a wealthier social class, I knew more about it than in Vienna, where I had hardly any connection. I had nothing to do with this question at all.
Were there any specific experiences in Prague that you can recollect which indicated anti-Semitism?
Not for me personally, no, because as I told you, I belong to this Jewish-German class and hardly mixed with anybody else. I had German-Gentile friends who were not anti-Semitic and came to me and we came to them, but I had very little outside experience. I lived a very secluded and comfortable life.
Did your husband consider himself to be a Czechoslovak or a German?
A Czechoslovak of German nationality, which afterwards was a great difficulty when I came back from concentration camp. I did not get the right traveling paper to come out because of having voted German in a count. In the year 1933, everybody had to fill in forms and to say where one was born and what nationality one belonged to. And as I was born in Vienna and spoke German, I had to put German, and so did my husband. But very many people put Jewish, which we did not. Now, people who had written Jewish, they were then not discriminated against after coming back from concentration camp, whereas people who had put German were discriminated by the Czechs.
At the time of this census in 1933, Did you think that this was some kind of loyalty test for you?
No, nothing at all. No, it just you got a form where it said, what is your mother language? And there I put German, and so did my husband, and that was why they counted us as German.
Did you suffer any discrimination for saying you were German before the war?
Nothing till Hitler came. No discrimination at all, no.
What was your reaction and that of your husband when Hitler came to power in Germany?
Well, I was a Cassandra. I always saw what was coming or felt what was coming, where my husband, who was beginning to have a cancer growth coming, which we did not know of at the time, he was not as strong-minded at the time as I was. I wanted to get out in time. And he said that he belongs to Czechoslovakia. He has lived there all his life, and nothing will happen in Czechoslovakia. Why should Hitler take Czechs? And I said at the time, and I will always remember that because people laughed at me, I said, Hitler will think the Czechs are just a flea, and they'll just squeeze the flea and off, out. Who are Czechs compared to Hitler Germany? And this is exactly what happened.
Did many people agree with you?
Yes, people went off in time and went off But my husband would not at the time, and so we remained there, and in the year 1939 we managed to send our children to England with a children transport which was organized by Quakers, and they were saved, and my brother-in-law was here in England and I had relatives here, and my children went to school here and grew up here, whereas my husband and I remained in Prague, and consequently then were sent off to Theresienstadt first, where he died, and I went on to Auschwitz and Oederan and back to Theresienstadt, and from there back to Prague for 6 months before I got the visa to come here and join my children here.
Did you or your husband have any interest in politics before the war?
No, never. Never. We followed what was going on, but I never had any interest. And my husband, who was ran a very large alcohol business and was vice president of the alcohol monopoly in Prague, and kept out of politics completely.
Can you remember the Munich crisis?
Yes.
What do you remember of it personally?
Oh, well, personally, just misery and fear, and we could not quite believe what was going on, but I don't think I remember anything I could tell you about that. It all came as a blow, and consequently I even got the permission from my husband to prepare furniture and lift vans to take our property out to England, which then just did not come off anymore. But he, as I told you before, had a cancer operation in, when was it, in May or June 1939, after my children were out already, and consequently was a very sick man.
Do you recollect any anti-British or anti-French feeling during the Munich crisis manifesting
Not
itself?
Not that I remember anything, no. You mean of the Czech people?
Yes.
No, I don't really know. Probably they thought they were let down by the French, but I don't remember any special incidents.
Do you recollect the Germans entering Czechoslovakia in March 1939?
Yes, we tried to get out and were even managed to get into a train to go get away. My children and nephew and my husband and myself, and we were in a train going up north towards England, but at the Czech frontier between Czechoslovakia and Germany, Saxonia, we were turned out and put into a station, into a room at the station, and were not exactly maltreated, but yelled at by the German soldiers and told to keep quiet for hours. We were not used to this by then yet, to be treated like that, so I was very much afraid, and so were the children. And by, we were forced to go back to a train, and we even had our luggage back again, and we were brought back to Prague. and stayed then with the children till 39, a whole year longer in our house in Prague, before I could get my children out to England.
When was it that you made this attempt to get out by train?
That was in March 39. I mixed up some dates here, I think. In March 39, when the Czechs came into Czechoslovakia, and from then on, I tried to manage to get the children out to England and found out about those transports where over 300 children at a time, there were lots of transports, one after another. My children were to have left in May already, but my son had mumps, started mumps, so they had to postpone. And they went out on the last transport, which was, I don't quite know, the end of June 39. And after that, then, in autumn, then, my husband had this operation.
How did German occupation affect your life at first?
It affected us very quickly, because we had to leave our house. First we stayed in our house, and then after my husband's operation, we came back to the house, and a fortnight later German officers came and said they are going to take away this house because they need it for a German high officer. The whole district where we lived was going to be occupied only by German high officials, and he gave me a fortnight to find new accommodation. And my husband was in bed after this very great operation, and during that fortnight I managed to find a flat and arrange the removal, and then we lived for a while in a very beautiful flat which had been vacant because people had gone off in time. And from there we had to leave that flat too, and then we had to live together with a young nephew of mine in one room in a Jewish flat where all the occupants, there were three rooms. In one you had an elderly couple, in one room there was my husband, my little nephew and I, and in the third room there was an old mother with her daughter. We all shared a kitchen and the bathroom, and we're not allowed to have a telephone, but the I don't know how you would call him, it was called the Treuhänder, that was somebody who had taken over, a guardian who had taken over my husband's business and who turned out to be a very great help for us, a German Nazi in a high position who had not only a great sense of humor, but he was an enormously honest and kind man, and I have to thank him for a lot of things. He helped me to the end when he couldn't help anymore. He himself was put into prison then by the Germans, and after the war, when I came back to Prague from Theresienstadt, he came to me again and had told me how he had been in prison and asked me whether I could not manage to get him a job in our Austrian firm. So you understand there was a great help and friendship between this man in a black shirt, he belonged to the SS top Nazi department, and helped where he could.
Was he a sincere Nazi?
I cannot tell you that. I once asked him, how is it possible that you do these things? His answer was, don't ask unpleasant questions. What he really thought or did not think, I do not know. He helped us have a telephone in our flat, because he said he will always have to be in touch with my husband, as he cannot run the firm properly without my husband's help. And that was the reason why we had a telephone right to the end, till we got off, had to go off to Theresienstadt. Thanks to him.
Did the Nazis start to impose restrictions on Jews straight away?
Yes, they came by and by. I cannot tell you one after another. They came by and by. You were not allowed to have radios. You were not allowed to have electric irons. They took away, and they managed to force us to bring these luxuries to the Jewish community house on a Saturday or on a Jewish high holiday. This was one of the spiteful things. They always managed to do it on a whole Jewish holy day, that you had to deliver up things. You were only allowed to buy food or go to shops between 3 and 5 in the afternoon. So the good foodstuffs were gone. You were not allowed to buy. You got sort of quotas, and Jews were not allowed meat or not allowed chickens or whatever. I can't tell you the details anymore. They were sordid and unpleasant, but one got used to it, and one expected it, and one got on with it.
How did the Germans behave personally as an occupying force?
I can only answer for myself. They only came once to our little room, in that flat, because they were asking my husband questions about the Yugoslav business. My husband's business had branch, was in Prague, and then we had a branch in Austria and one in Yugoslavia, and they were trying to get information about the money in Yugoslavia. And there were two men who came. One discussed it with my husband while I was in the kitchen, and the other one looked through all the files in our room, all the letters and everything. But they were not polite, but not offensive, and they took my husband along then, and I thought that would be the end. But he came back after an hour and said they had even asked him to sit down and not to stand all the time, and they had been quite polite, and he had to tell them about the